one of the biggest things for, I'll say a pinch point for our, specifically the double team or the Quazalofop tolerant grain sorghum, is that we're not necessarily replacing a current system. And, a lot of, when you think back of new technologies and herbicide tolerance, you are actually, you're using some formulation, you replace it with this, and you get a better result, right? What we're doing, we're adding a technology that's actually additive. So, even the stewards, in order to manage weed resistance, we have stewardship guidelines for our trait. And it really, it requires growers to still use pre-plant herbicides so we have multiple modes of action, and we keep the effective weed control that Quazalofop can provide over the top.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. A robust return on your sorghum investment is not just a dream. Learn more at doubleteamsorghum.com. KWS Hybrid Rye, seeding the future since 1856.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wyzenetics. I'm Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, excited to have on Brent Johnson. He's a vice president of sales and marketing for America's S&W Seeds. Mr. Johnson is currently the VP of sales and marketing and has served as the national sales director in North America when first joining the organization in 2019. The sales team that Mr. Johnson has led during his 3 years as sales director has increased core crop revenue, which is including and focusing in alfalfa and grain sorghum. Mr. Johnson has been in the seed industry for nearly 30 years. His early career was ag retailer, working as a crop specialist. Mr. Johnson's depth of experience in all levels of sales and marketing in the seed industry has been a critical part of the growth and success in each position he has held over the times. Mr. Johnson is also currently a member of the Western Seed Association, Midwest Forage Association, National and National Alfalfa and Forage Association. Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm looking forward to having a conversation and learning a little bit more about you and your road to S&W Seeds.
Very good. Glad to join you, Brian. Thank you.
So speaking of which, how did you end up from, 30 years ago, just an ag retail as a crop specialist to being, the VP of sales of the Americas? That's kind of move up from regional sales.
Yeah, well, I'd like to say it's been a long and winding road, Brian. But career started in ag retail, as you mentioned. Worked for both, a Land O'Lakes affiliated cooperative and Growmark affiliated cooperative. So I had an opportunity, when I first started out, a couple of real good, solid companies to do training with and develop a good base of agronomic knowledge and, how to apply that down to the farmer level. And then, that really got my interest in the seed part of the ag retail. From there, I joined Cargill when they still had a seed division. So Cargill eventually ended up selling off the U.S. seed business to, at the time, it was Dow or Micogen, which became Dow and now has merged on. But worked for Cargill for 3 years. Great organization, right? Cargill is obviously still a powerhouse in agriculture. Just chose not to be in the seed business at that time. And then after that, that's where I took a twist toward alfalfa and worked for a company called WL Research, which was basic in alfalfa research and production. They were eventually purchased by Forage Genetics, which is owned a wholly owned subsidiary of Land O'Lakes, and spent really about 18 of my years, my 18 years of my career there. And that's, and I had a launched Roundup Ready alfalfa, was part of a team that launched Harvextra, or reduced lignin alfalfa. So really brought traits to the alfalfa industry. So, when I think of, and then eventually on to S&W Seed. And so the experience of going from really both of those crops primarily had been conventional at the time I started with them. And, obviously alfalfa, I don't know the latest on Roundup Ready or Harvextra, but I'm told it's somewhere north of 25% of the U.S. market. And, grain sorghum technology launched here 4 years ago. We weren't the first to market, but eventually S&W traits had taken over as a number one trait provider in the U.S. So it's been kind of an interesting road to not necessarily, you know, really being with companies that were conventional only, and then moving to traits in two crops.
Rise and shine. A robust return on your sorghum investment is not just a dream. You can wake up with the peace of mind knowing you've wisely invested in Double Team Sorghum Cropping Solution, powered by the DT Trait Hybrid and First Act herbicide. They give growers over-the-top control of common grass weeds that reduce yield and profitability. Growers can get up to $137 more an acre compared to non-Double Team systems. Trust a system that gives you the performance you want. Learn more at doubleteamsorghum.com.
I kind of want to dig into that, but I got a first question first. And so this is my interest. And so, you know, there's a lot of folks that listen on this, or, you know, I've got a lot of students that listen. So a lot of young folks really interested in the ag sector. And so my curiosity is, you know, you started in ag sales 30 years ago. Has ag sales and ag retail changed much in the last three decades versus what you're bringing on now and you're trying to train the next generation of ag retailers?
Yeah, so one of the primary changes has been trait development in all crops. Mm-hmm. So when I, this will definitely date me, but there really were no traded crops when I first started selling. You know, I think of one of the first traits that came on the market was BT corn, for mm-hmm. example, right? And at the time, everybody, what they were telling us at the updates was, you're going to be selling technology and seed. It won't come in a jug or a bag, right? And at the time, it seemed mind-boggling. Because that, you know, there were really everything was seed, and you there were no traits. And now I'd say fast forward, although you don't really fast forward 30 years, Brian. But it really all those things that people said were going to happen have come true. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of there's still some conventional out there, but just the development of traits across majority of the commodity crops produced in the U.S. has been the biggest change.
So as you look at that, and as you look at bringing what was very conventional crops such as sorghum, bringing traits into, as you said, has really hit the last couple of years. What were some of the pinch points and hurdles in the first couple of years of release when it starts coming in to bringing a traded crop into a world that was traditionally commercial, conventional?
Yeah. You know, so I'll speak to all. There's really three, a couple of platforms. One is herbicide tolerant grain sorghum and now forage sorghum. Mm-hmm. And there are really three companies that have that technology. The three technologies are iGrowth mm-hmm. from Advanta, Inzen from Corteva, Pioneer, and Double Team Technology from S&W Seed. And, you know, all three of the herbicides are tolerant to, they're, you know, they've been in the market for a number of years, right? So it's not necessarily new formulations mm-hmm. or new modes of action, but it was new for those three crops. And I think the one of the biggest things for, I'll say a pinch point for our, specifically the Double Team or the Quazalofop tolerant grain sorghum is that we're not necessarily replacing a current system. And, you know, a lot of, when you think back of new technologies and herbicide tolerance, you are actually, you know, you're using some formulation, you replace it with this and yep. you get a better result, right? What we're doing, you know, we're adding a technology that's actually additive. So, you know, even the stewards, you know, in order to manage weed resistance, we mm-hmm. have stewardship guidelines for our trait. And it really requires growers to still use pre-plant herbicides so we have multiple modes of action, and we keep the effective weed control that Quazalofop can provide over the top. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the pinch point is you're not replacing something, mm-hmm. right? So there isn't use this, save that. It's just making an overall system better. So.
So that's interesting, you know, from the extension side, you know, we have been, prior to even having traits, it's all about, all right, we're going to have a suite of chemistries between your pre's and what we have limited over the top. And And it, this over the top with sorghum has been a really, has great potential, a big, big, been a big deal for the movement into acres that have had historic weed problems. So you just say, I just can't grow grain sorghum because I've got weed problems. How have you seen the adoption of Double Team?
Yeah, so you know, maybe start from when prior to our launch, we had done quite a bit of market research and grower surveys to identify. You know, what we're really about is identifying grower problems and then bringing a solve to those, right? Solutions to the marketplace. So we, you know, identified particularly grass control and then more specifically post-emerge grass control, right? So there are a number of products that producers have been using over the years. But once they had, and there is a host of broadleaf herbicides that are very effective at controlling broadleaf. Really no option once they had either an escape. You're at Oklahoma there. Certainly there are periods of dry weather after the pre-plant herbicide's put down and that maybe it doesn't activate. And then you do get finally get the moisture to get the crop moving and then the flush of weeds come, right? So what options do I have? And really bringing an option for post-emerge herbicide.
So have you seen, as you look at the distribution, are you seeing sorghum jump into acres that wasn't before, or are you just seeing a transition of seed technology in existing acres?
Yes and yes. one of the things about grain sorghum, and I think at one time, we've lost millions of acres over the last 20 years. We've been bouncing, I think as low as maybe 5.8 million, maybe a high of 7.6 or, you know, somewhere in that range over the last 10 years. And I'm not sure where this year is headed. It feels like there's a lot of, with the recent announcements of stocks of corn and soybeans, I'm sure they'll be out. They're going to be out aggressively looking for acres right before before spring, and that always puts pressure on crops like grain sorghum. But I think there has been a shift in some of those areas. You know, particularly I think of western Kansas, eastern Colorado, Panhandle of Texas, where there have been there's been weed control concerns. Corn has always, corn has kept set the pace for technologies as far as weed control options, and sorghum had fallen way behind. So for those producers who had specific weed issues and there really wasn't a solution, I think I think there was a general tendency to turn to corn to help solve those. But those are some of the same areas now that are getting hit the hardest with water management issues, right? So you think of the Ogallala Aquifer specifically, right? And just the attention to how do we get more efficient with the water that we have, the water that producers are using. So I think the combination of now bringing some additional weed control solutions to a crop, along with a crop that is better in water efficiency, that grain sorghum, to that extent, Brian, grain sorghum has come back to some of those areas, or at least it's given the grower another option where maybe before they didn't really consider grain sorghum.
It's probably a good point to even step back. I mean, I'm in Oklahoma. I've been around here forever. I work a lot in Texas and Kansas. And so grain sorghum is something I grew up with. Although grew up calling it Milo, it's grain sorghum. But can you take a moment to talk about the fit for, where does grain sorghum fit in the U.S. agriculture systems? You've already mentioned that it has some drought tolerance. And so maybe spend a moment to talk about, where's its fit and why is it important? Why wouldn't you just grow corn?
So I'll maybe give a summary of, where in the U.S. are we growing grain sorghum, right? So if you take a line from South Dakota and draw it straight down to Laredo, Texas, you're going to cover every state that grows grain sorghum, and that's about 95% of the U.S. production. So there are some pockets, particularly along the eastern seaboard, southeast U.S., where there is grain sorghum. But you know, that those are the primary areas. Those also tend to be, you know, they're arid, right? So half of the U.S. acres are in the state of Kansas today. Probably no surprise. But you know, I think the, you know, the opportunity, there's always been a strong export market for grain sorghum. I do think, you know, depending on what the fuel standards are, grain sorghum can qualify for meeting some sustainability requirements for ethanol plants if they're looking for that. I also think we're seeing more usage of sorghum silage. I'll use that. You take that Dalhart, Texas area where there's a lot of large dairies moving in, looking to maximize tonnage, and they may not have unlimited water supply anymore. So I think those are some of the biggest fits.
Yeah, and I like it. And so describe where I see it also is, you know, Stillwater's in about 36 inches of rainfall. And so it's right in that sorghum belt where you're 24 inches to 36 inches. You really get, there's a lot drier sorghum, but you get in that realm. And for me, sorghum has such a nice fit often over corn on our marginal ground, maybe eroded, historically eroded. This is, you know, the Dust Bowl zone where we don't have the deepest of soils anymore. And corn just doesn't fit well because while your average yield may be 120 or 130 bushel, it's a range of maybe 180 at the high and zero at a low. And then the good years, you might have aflatoxin. With a crop like sorghum, we often may not hit the highest high, but it's such a great semi-arid crop in the fact that it can handle so much more stress. Sorghum will just, you know, sit back for a while and let the environment do what it is and then jump into gear once it rains again. It has this great kind of potential just to sit back. And so we can use sorghum a lot in our region because it's more stable. As far as our lows, you always get that. Also have a great opportunity to forage it. So on the grain forage side, you can always, if you don't make grain, you could always hay it, or you could send cattle out and graze it. And then, as you mentioned, we hadn't talked about it yet. You guys have a whole other group. I've been focusing on the grain sorghum, but you've also got the forage sorghums. And I've been curious because I'm grain sorghum. That's what I think of. Does the forage sorghums also have these traits? Do you have double team in the forage sorghums, or are they still the conventional?
Yeah, so we've actually, last year we launched herbicide tolerance for the single cut silage forage sorghum. So we did bring that technology there. This year, we've got a commercial launch of what's called prussic acid free, where we refer to it as PF trait. That were the exclusive licensor of that trait. We partnered with Purdue University. They were the developers of it. What that does is it right now it's in a grazing sorghum sedan type, Brian. So you know, you mentioned if you have a crop, let's say a crop field, you can always graze. Well, there's risks in that, right? So depending where you are in the U.S., either sorghum that's any sorghum that's under stress, whether it's from drought early in season or later in the season when frost becomes an issue, there's the danger of prussic acid poisoning. So what the PF trait does is eliminates that risk and allows producers to graze in the fall risk-free. You know, think about we're working on stacking it in grain sorghum, moving that trait to grain sorghum. So you think about being able to harvest sorghum and then letting the livestock graze after that without having to move cattle, worrying about pulling them off. So,
which is a huge thing that we're looking at OSU is that post-harvest grazing and being an extension, you know, probably every extension office in Kansas, Oklahoma, probably the entire region, you said, most extension offices have that prussic acid drip test because it's such a critical thing because we see it in the Johnson grass and the sorghums and sorghum sedan. So that is a significant concern in livestock. So that's really fascinating that you guys were able to bring that to the marketplace. I guess kind of along the lines of this, can you talk about specifically in what you guys are doing, You mentioned the word stewardship. What does it mean by trait stewardship, and what are some of the techniques that S&W utilizes for good stewardship of your traits?
You know, so that you mentioned two of the watchouts, and that was Johnson grass and shattercane, right? So from mm-hmm. both from the sorghum family, and because they are so close, there's always that risk of cross-pollination. So that it's one of the reasons why so we have a couple of key stewardship pieces to try and I guess eventually weed resistance I guess there hasn't probably been a herbicide technology that hasn't developed our weed resistance at some point. So it's kind of a let's manage this as best we can for as long as we can. Right. But for those two, that's one of the reasons we still require the use of a pre-plant herbicide. So additional modes of action. And then never going back to back with our trait on the same acre. So we're proponent of traded technology, and so perhaps it's one of our competitors in between. We also have a line of conventionals, but making sure that we're not using the same mode of action year after year and allowing weeds to develop resistance within the system. So those are two of the primary focuses for managing the stewardship of the trait.
Which is honestly just good stewardship. Period is mode of action rotation and switching up those crops. I guess in our final few minutes, can you speak a little bit about, we've been focusing on the sorghum, speak a little bit about alfalfa.
Yeah. So our company S&W is basic in two crops, alfalfa and sorghum. And, we have a full line of both dormant and non-dormant alfalfa that we market in the U.S. and internationally. So here from the U.S., we ship to Mexico, South America, we do some dormant business in China. But, alfalfa, along with, we're not corn and beans, right? Mm-hmm. Either crop. I've over my career, I've seen alfalfa go from, on average around 3 million acres seeded annually. I think right now it sort of hovers between around 1.7 million acres. And there has to be a certain level to sustain the livestock that it's here mm-hmm. in the U.S. And then the next year it goes down a little more. So I do think there's been a change in particularly dairies that feed alfalfa. They're finding other forages, I think more using more annual forages, finding other sources of protein to feed. And I know we watch real closely the average pounds of alfalfa fed on a dry matter basis on a dairy cow. And it's a line that goes like this over a period of time. So growers have figured out how to, or producers have figured out other ways to keep livestock production or dairy and milk production up with other sources. So, I mean, the crop is great for the soil. Yeah. It holds soil, reduces erosion, produces nitrogen to be used mm-hmm. for subsequent crops. So I think it has a great fit within on-farm systems, particularly where you're feeding it to animals yourself.
I'm kind of curious of this shift. Is that a ease of production or a production cost, do you think is shifting away or slowly reducing the amount of alfalfa in the rations? Or
yeah, I think nutritionists like annual forages. You think of the variability of the alfalfa pit, for example, mm-hmm. and you have four cuttings, maybe five, depending on your geography. So you got five different cuttings. That's five different. That's five different nutrition, and then probably within there, right, by uh-huh. field, there's variability. Where if you're taking a single cut annual forage, corn silage, forage silage, it's probably a field is probably chopped off, and they're done harvesting in 3 to 5 days, and it's much more consistent. So, I think the consistency, so as far as balancing a ration, uh-huh. you keep coming back and testing alfalfa all the time. That variability within a pit or silo. I think it's one key reason why these annual forages have really taken over, particularly in larger dairies, right? Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's time for our famous three.
So I think we're going to wrap up with this. It's been a ton of fun. I want to hit you with our wrap-up questions. And so, you know, over time, what has been some of your best go-to work resources when you have questions or problems? Where do you go to?
I spend a lot of time scouring internet or websites. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible for North and South America, the global market. It's become such a global market, and really understanding the impact, particularly after some of the latest political mm-hmm. events, really trying to understand, and try and be in front of any impacts that might be happening in South America that are going to impact our business and our customer growers here in the U.S. So internet and web-based material, I spend a lot of my free time on there, primarily around ag sites. So.
Fantastic. Now, a little bit more personal, you know, what do you do for, you know, what's your favorite leisurely activity? What do you do in all your free time?
Yeah. So, well, I'll say that I enjoy travel, although the more I do it for work, the less enjoyable it is when I have some free time off. But my significant other and I, her and I do a lot of travel when I'm not traveling for work. Enjoy hiking. We spend quite a bit of time the last few years in Colorado, Rocky Mountain National Park. So just being outdoors we also have a small 10-acre farm where we plant garden and pumpkins and enjoy family time there. So it's about family, being outside. Probably no surprise, right? I was born and raised on a crop farm and spent my entire career here in agriculture. So, the beautiful job, or one of the real perks of being VP of Sales and Marketing and covering North and South America, is the opportunity to get out and see agriculture and people in all parts of the globe. And regardless of where you're producing crops, they're really there's a lot more alike than they are different, regardless of country. So that's really an enjoyable part.
If I had to ask you for the one must-see location, and somebody that is wanting to travel, would you have one must-see location?
You know, I love Argentina. That's probably one of my favorite spots. Buenos Aires, a beautiful city. And then really down along the coast there. So I really enjoy South America.
Fantastic. And then finally, where do people go to find more about S&W Seeds?
Yeah, so a couple different sites. I'll get the one, SWSeedCo.com. We'll take you to a number of different spots. And then, specifically for our traits, it's DoubleTeamGrainSorghum.com. So,
well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wyzenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Brent Johnson, the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for the Americas for S&W Seeds. Y'all, if you enjoyed what you heard and enjoyed this, subscribe to the channel so you get to hear and notice every time we drop a new podcast. Share this video with anybody of your friends and your peers. If you've learned something and you enjoyed it, of course, leave us comments and suggestions for new guests or any questions you had for past guests. Brent, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.